And then the transition was this professional was coming in, and some of the players required certain funds to support them in their training, because obviously things were being put in place whereby they want to go to a gym and start sort of become more athletic. And so there was a lot of wants and things like that. And then the beginning of the season, it wasn't successful for whatever reason. And I must have, we went to South Africa. The very first game in South Africa was Hamilton, and we lost. That put a real damper on the...
This was the South African tour.
That was before we even played the Premiership game.
This was between the 3rd and 17th of August, 94.
That's correct, yes.
Just for the record.
Luckily, we managed to pull the tour around. We didn't lose another game. And the last game was against Stellenbosch, which is a renowned South African university. And we managed to get the tour back on track after that first game. And we were looking quite healthy coming into the first game of the season. There were one or two little areas that we felt that we needed players. Outside half was one of them, where we didn't have a real international quality 10. The season didn't start well. I think we played Wasps in our first game and got absolutely mullered. The second game, I remember, I think it was West Hartlepool here, which we won, and we got things back on track then. Then up to Christmas, just things weren't going right. It wasn't anything to do with the playing and the training. It was just the little bits off. There was a lot of rumours going around from other clubs about the professionalism and players getting paid, etc., etc. And Barry Corliss and I, you know, just felt that we didn't have a strong enough squad, and we needed more players of better quality. Not to say that the players that we had weren't good enough, they were, but obviously injuries were taking a toll, unavailabilities were taking a toll as well.
Was your impression that the other clubs were getting stronger, perhaps with money being available?
That was free help, really. Everybody knew it. Yes. And King's Home at the time had said, you know, we're not going to be professional, which to me as a local player, which was, let the committee run the club, you're the coach, you coach, let the players play. But there was a player demand throughout the country that they wanted to see a financial remuneration, which was fair enough, I think. So I think things just sort of got a little bit worse, because obviously I think Barry Corliss was trying to drive this professional era through the club. But there was, players didn't get on with him. He was a nice enough chap. And I don't think the players and Barry Corliss suited each other. And I think, from my point of view, I was a little bit out of my depth as well until later years. I didn't have enough experience in coaching at this level, and just relied heavily on people like Andy Deacon and Simsy to get us through, really. And obviously Mike Teague had gone then.
He went to Moseley
for a financial remuneration, which the club did not agree with. And all of a sudden, it was before Christmas, a player and I got called to one of the committee men's houses outside of a training night, and we thought, what's all this about? And we were there, and there was one or two senior Gloucester committee men there, and we were asked quite bluntly what we thought of Barry Corliss. So we gave our opinion, and the the next training session, one of the committee men came up to me and said, "Viv, can you get all the players into the players' bar," which was underneath the stand at the time. And it was about announced then that Barry Corliss had left us. Mm-hmm. No reasons were given. And they said, "Viv, you've just got to take over the reins, really, until we get a few things sorted out." But luckily, during that time, I was in conversation with Mike T to come back, because I thought it'd be a great coup for the club. Mm-hmm. It'd been great for the players to have somebody of his experience around them. It took me a long time to persuade the committee at Gloucester Rugby Club to allow Mike to come back to King's Home. But I think at that time they started to realise that they weren't going to stop professionalism. And they took it on board and they embraced it. And fair play to Gloucester Committee, that they did. They pulled out all the stops, as far as I was concerned, to say, look, we need to start getting some better players. And
for Gloucester, this was a huge decision.
Oh,
against the background of all you've said about family and
it was. You've got to recognise that the committee at that time, you know, were old elk, but they were willing to change, and they were willing to change because of the success of King's Home. And it wasn't a personal thing. It was this family and this bedrock that was in christened into King's Home as far as playing was concerned, and you play for nothing. You know, and the privilege was just put your cherry and white on. And Mickey Burton always said to me once that probably the best day of his life was when he put his cherry and white on, not his English shirt or his British Lions shirt. It just means so much. And you've got to give credit to the committee at the time to change it. And they allowed Mike T to come back. And at that time, I did another couple of coaching courses, and one of them was up in Oxford with Richard Hill. And contrary to lots of stories, I said to Richard up there at the time, I said, look, there's a coaching job at King's Home, a director of rugby's job, and I think, you know, you've got the experience, you're the man. And it was his first ever coaching course. He'd never become a coach, Richard Hill, not at all. And I came back to King's Home and I had a chat with Mike Teague, and we played Sale a couple of weeks later, and Paul Turner was the coach, playing coach at Sale at the time.
Welshman.
Yes, correct. And very much like Ciparani. He had a skill level that was second to none as a 10. And Mike Teague and I sat with him in the old committee room downstairs and asked him if he would give up Sale and come here. Which obviously he reclined. And so Mike and I had a chat and I said, look, what about Illy? I know he's doing nothing. He'd fallen out with Bath. Not fallen out with him. I think he just wanted to go his different way. And luckily Mike got hold of Richard. Richard came up for an interview with the committee, and they announced within 24 hours that Richard Hill will take over as director of rugby.
Because I think it's right to say that there was professionalism wasn't official at this stage. We were still in the rather sort of shadowy period when people were being paid, but it hadn't been declared officially at the top level that we were out of a professional game.
No, we weren't. You know, certain players, they used to call it expenses, so they would claim their expenses, and that's how they got around it. And Dave Sims actually worked for Gloucester Rugby Club under Geraldine Peake in the offices, and was the first professional player at King's Home, and that's how it went. And it was a sad exit, obviously, but it was a sign of the times. It was the way it was going. The players weren't happy, the committee weren't happy, the club certainly wasn't happy, and the supporters weren't happy. So they had to change, and you got to tip your cap to the committee. They did change it, and they wanted change, as I said, purely for the success of Gloucester.